Hello and welcome to another new episode of the 3Bid League podcast. As always, I am your host, Tyler, joined by Matt, and we're going to follow one of the few remaining traditions from every year of this pod. And just like your uncle who really wanted that cheap flight, we're going to drop off our Christmas gifts a whole weekend early here because we got a special episode coming for you guys next week. But the traditions must go on anyway, so we're going to take this next little bit of time, deliver gifts that each of the 14 teams really need, and then we're going to be joined by the guys from Lux's Litter Box, Cole and Sean, to talk about Davidson. That'll be on the back half of this pod. Matt, are you in the holiday spirit yet?
I am in the holiday spirit, Tyler. We're getting there, getting close to the end of the non-conference season. A-10 play is going to be here before we know it. But before that, we do have to give out a couple Christmas gifts to the teams as they prepare for the conference season. A couple of mine might not be the nicest gifts, but you know, we'll try to help these teams out, get them prepared for the second half of the season. How's that sound?
Sounds good to me. Why don't you take a look in Santa's sleigh and see what he's got here first?
All right, we're gonna go high dollar value first. And you mentioned Davidson. We have a couple great guests coming on later in this podcast, but we'll go over to Belk Arena. And what I'm gonna give the Wildcats, they need a new sound system in Jumbotron for Belk Arena. They need something to pump up their home fans. And the reason I say that, you know, we're gonna get a lot more into Davidson later on, but the Wildcats are the number one team in the net in the A-10 right now, having a surprisingly good season. Their home conference schedule was very favorable. They've got only VCU and Rhode Island, really. I think also St. Louis at home for their tough games, but they avoid Bonaventure, they avoid Dayton, they avoid Richmond. I really do think 8-1 or 9-0 is on the table for Davidson, so that's my gift, something to help them out on their home court. And also, you know, maybe if Santa comes early, the Wildcats get Loyola Chicago next Wednesday. So hopefully they get a big crowd for that. I don't know what it's going to be like on the Wednesday afternoon before Christmas, but, you know, Davidson's always got such a great home court advantage, and maybe they can do even better this year.
Yeah, that game does come on Festivus, and I think that is actually an advantage since Davidson's played pretty well and probably slightly above expectations so far this year. Not too much for the Wildcats fans to really sit at home and air their grievances about. So they can all go to the game a happy crowd.
I think so.
So I'll start. I'm going to go random in the middle, but I'm going to start at the top of the standings, close at the bottom. St. Bonaventure. I would give Mark Schmidt the magical power to be able to pick when halftime occurs in the game. The Bonnies are minus 21 on the season in the first half. By contrast, they're plus 91 in the second half. It's this bizarre thing that just continues to happen. So I think we let Mark Schmidt just go to a quarter system like the women's game has done. But they take the halftime break after the first quarter. Bonaventure gets to suck for 10 minutes. They come back out. They rampage everyone in the final 30. We're good. They go undefeated the rest of the way. I don't know, 2 seed in the NCAA tournament. Maybe even win the national title with this system. How do they fix that first quarter before the break? I don't know. They might have to bring in like Ted Lasso or something. Because other than just making them believe, I don't know how we get that team to play better. And by the way, it's bizarre. They have no bench. This should actually be the opposite of how it really is.
Yeah, you'd think so. That has been an interesting phenomenon all season. And maybe an earlier halftime could help them out. But yeah, one of those things you just can't really explain. So hopefully it gets better for St. Bonaventure as the season goes on. All right, next gift. We're going to go down to VCU. We always talk a lot about VCU, always stuff going on around the Siegel Center. But first, I want to talk about something that happened to their next-door neighbors, the Richmond Spiders, who just unveiled a banner to celebrate Jacob Gilliard's all-time steals accomplishment. So I don't want VCU to feel left out. We know they enjoy banners. So for Christmas, I'm going to give them their own banner. And you know what's going to be on that banner? It's going to celebrate Briante Weber, who is the all-time leader in steals rate in the NCAA since 2010, because that's as far as that statistic goes back. But we're going to celebrate him as the true steals goat, according to VCU fans, according to a lot of people. So that's one of two gifts. That one wasn't in good faith. So my other gift, VCU needs something more out of a couple of their transfers, Marcus Sahonis and Jimmy Nichols, two guys coming from power conference programs who, honestly, they haven't played as much as I expected. And
I forgot about Jimmy Nichols.
Yeah, I thought he was going to be really good. Hasn't quite worked out at VCU, but I'm going to get them some, like, you know, better new student orientation, something to make them more comfortable at VCU. Because I think for the Rams to reach their ceiling down the stretch of the season, they're going to need to get some more from those guys. So that's my real gift to VCU. It's not just the banner. This is a two-part gift. And we'll go with that. There's never too many banners in the Siegel Center.
I think you could have gone with the peace of mind of knowing that Ace Baldwin could be fully healthy, or possibly a Briante Weber banner acknowledging that he was the 21st century steals king and would have remained that way if Jacob Gilliard played less minutes per game.
Yeah, also on that
Briante. You put a little tiny asterisk at the bottom in the fine print if Jacob Gilliard played less.
Also, we're going to put on that Weber banner, just in the fine print, only played four seasons. None of this extra eligibility stuff.
That's actually in larger print than the Briante Weber record part of the banner.
That VCU banner jokes, that has quickly turned into like one of the best memes in the A-10. I'm so sorry, but that was just an easy one.
So I guess I might as well just go to Richmond then. And my gift to the Spiders would be just a full 3-hour practice with Coach Michael Malone of the Denver Nuggets. It's odd. Richmond's actually up in assists this year. Their scoring is up about 0.2 points per game. All of this despite the fact that Tyler Burton is just living in a world of inferno. 18.4 points a game, 45% from three on pretty high volume. Also, Grant Golden, 45% from three on medium volume. This team is just flamethrowing from beyond the arc, 38%. But eye test wise, they don't feel right on offense. And it feels like they've kind of lost their essence. They're racking up the assists because they're doing a good job of hitting the open shooter. The piece of the Richmond offense where they were just finding cutters all the time, where Nathan Kao was lurking around the dunker spot, always a threat to just catch and finish, it's just not there in the way it used to be. And so I've compared Grant Golden to a super poor man's Nikola Jokic many times. I've tried to get the nickname the Fulcrum to catch on. He's not doing that as much this year. And so I think we give the Spiders a chance with Jokic's coach. We get this offense back right, because the way Burton is playing in the ISO game, their defense can continue to suck. And if they get back to their normal offense, then they really can make the NCAA tournament.
Hopefully that doesn't lead to Golden starting to get tossed from games, though. Might not need to want to emulate everything Jokic has done.
Golden can go full enforcer on one of those VCU Twitter people.
All right, that's a good one. Next, we're going to go over to Fordham. And this gift is going to sound mean. I promise it's in good faith. I'm going to get Fordham a new pillow for Christmas. And I want to preface it by saying I love getting a new pillow for Christmas. It's one of the best gifts you can get. And anyone that doesn't think so is a liar. Look, Fordham is probably finishing in the bottom four of the conference. We did hype them up a bit the last couple weeks. The Rams are playing really well. They went kind of down to the wire against the Miami Hurricanes, had a chance to win that game in the second half. I still think they're going to finish 11th or 12th in the A-10, but this year they're going to be showing up to Wednesday in the Atlantic 10 tournament with a good chance to win. So I'm getting them a fresh pillow. They're going to show up and beat GW or LaSalle or Duquesne or whoever they play. Fordham is going to use that new pillow. They're advancing to Thursday this year, so that's my gift, and it's going to be Fordham's best finish in the A-10 tournament in a while, so a serious gift. I really think they can make it at least to Thursday this year.
It's going to be a nice fluffy pillow so they can hold their head up at an angle and represent Fordham not being too high this year.
Yeah, sure. I think so.
So I'll go to another perpetual pillow fight team who may be on the ups this year, the St. Joe's Hawks. And I'm sorry to tell them, but they're going to wake up on Christmas morning and be reminded that, hey, they got their gift in July or June or something, which is Jordan Hull doing the, I don't even want to call it rare because I don't remember it ever happening, move of transferring to Texas A&M for 3 weeks, I believe, and then going back on it and deciding to stay at St. Joe's. And, you know, he's a Philly kid. He mentioned that there were things with the city of Philadelphia that he just needed to leave and get out of there. We still don't really know what those things were, why he chose to leave, but I guess he had a change of heart, and he has just been flat out awesome for them this year. He's scoring 17 points a game, 6.5 rebounds, 5.8 assists. He's averaging a triple nickel and really not that close to the cut line on any of them. That was their gift. They got him back. They would not be good without him. But, you know, we can't leave them empty-handed. We got to at least throw something in their stocking. And so their little tiny gift, just fixing Jack Forrest. I don't know what's wrong with him, but he was good last year in his limited time before he got hurt. 10.5 points a game, 3 rebounds. He's now at 3.7 points a game. He's shooting 19% from beyond the arc. He was one of my breakout guys this year. At this point, he's closer to just simply being out of the rotation to that point. So let's get him in the lab over Christmas break, see if some adjustments can't be made.
Yeah, I think that's a good one. And St. Joe's kind of in a similar position to Fordham, where they have a chance to sneak up on some people. I don't think they're definitely going to be a basement team as they have for the last couple of years. So that's a good one. All right, my next gift, we'll go over to St. Louis and another team where I have two gifts. The first one, to celebrate an earlier accomplishment this year, I'm giving them a ribbon for winning the Cancun Challenge, not a trophy, because they only beat Illinois State and Stephen F. Austin. So not going to get carried away, but they won an MTE, and that's awesome. The other gift, I'm going to get one for every single player on the roster. They're all going to get a Gibson Jimerson fathead to hang up in their room, because I want them all to wake up, see Gibson Jimerson's face, and be like, yeah, I got to pass this guy the ball as much as I can. Because what Jimerson has been doing is simply amazing on offense this year for St. Louis. He's completely filled in as one of the best bucket getters in the entire conference. And what I've loved this year, too, is just how much more aggressive he's been. I really do think St. Louis is going to kind of live and die with Jimerson's scoring ability this year. You look at his two worst games of the year, the two games he was in single digits against Memphis and UAB where St. Louis lost. And those were also his two games with the fewest field goals attempted. So he needs to be that go-to guy. He needs to be a volume scorer. And the Billikens just need to make sure they're getting him the ball as much as they can. So I think a fathead should do the trick for that. They're going to see him all the time. They're going to remember it when they're out on the court with him.
Could also inspire them to strive to take the next step in their game like we saw Jimerson do this year.
Yeah, I think so.
All right, so I will give out a gift to the LaSalle Explorers. So, you know, there's a lot of problems with LaSalle right now, and I'm not sure one thing can really fix this team enough to get them out of the pillow fight. But what we can try to fix is the attendance problems at the Tom Gola Aquatic Center slash, I guess the fancy term would be the Natorium.
Multi-purpose facility.
No, it's a Natorium, and then there just happens to be a basketball court above it. So 6 home games this year, they have broken 2,000 fans twice. They got 3,000 for the homecoming against Albany, and they got the 2,600 against Penn, which is presumably helped by the fact that there were some excited Penn fans who made the short trip over there. But they've been stuck under 2,000 for everything else. And we tend to think of Philly sports fans as kind of these rough and tumble, angry people. But some of the previous Philly teams have proven to us that you can give some pizzazz in the arena. You can give a great show and a great celebration. And I think LaSalle understands that. That's why they got the light up L, then added a smoke machine, then added a second smoke machine. They're trying to get people pumped. I think they've done what they can over there. I think they need to add another element of pizzazz, because this could be a long rebuild. It could be a process per se. And so I think we get them a giant confetti cannon that goes off after they win. And because conference play could be rough, we set it off for the moral victories too, because that's what you do in a long process. And so, you know, they lost that heartbreaker to Sacred Heart in overtime. I say we treat it like a European sport, and if they are tied at the end of regulation, we set the cannon off as if they had won, and we got to clean up the confetti before overtime.
Got to celebrate what you can if you're LaSalle. I mean, I still wouldn't be that surprised if they get a big win at some point, just since they did it last year. They're probably going to ruin some team season that gets off to a good start in the A-10. But yeah, that would be good. I mean, Tom Gold Arena, they're making improvements. You love to see it. Now we just got to get some butts in seats, and it's going to be one of the greatest home courts there is. All right, next one for me. We'll go over to UMass, and not the best gift. The Minutemen, they've been okay this year, but, you know, not deserving of a super expensive gift. I'm just getting them the most durable duct tape that I can find, because they need something to hold their defense together. Maybe you could get some hot glue guns or something, but they don't really have a glue guy at this point. Nobody has stepped up to be that leader on defense. I just think it's wild that at the day we're recording this, UMass is a top 30 team in KenPom offensive efficiency. They're 316th in defense, which has to be the biggest disparity between offense and defense this year in the country. And they're clearly the worst defensive team in the A-10 right now, or at least ranked as the worst. So they need something just to hold that team together, get a couple of stops. They don't need to be that great. I mean, their offense is really good. Like, it's legitimately scary how well the Minutemen are shooting the three this year. But they're not going to be a true contender in the A-10 with the way their defense is played.
Yeah, that was always the concern. Maybe it's Preston Santos. Maybe that's just their gift. He hasn't played very much this year, so.
Yeah, all right. That'd be good.
Guess I'll give out a gift to Dayton here. And I'm going to give them the gift of the visit from the ghost of Flyers past, which, by the way, is Brian Gregory. Coming to tell the fans that what they had been watching was all an illusion, at least before Thanksgiving. That the Austin Peay game actually didn't happen the way it did. That Malachi Smith's taunting technical was fake and everything after that was made up. They won that game in a blowout. UMass Lowell, not even a real school. That was
the flagship.
These were all just simply made up as part of the simulation so that UD fans could kind of sit back and appreciate how much talent this team has, how good they're going to be in the next few years, and just basically get a warning to stop giving themselves a heart attack all the time. So he's going to come back. He's going to arrive to tell them that the only bye game they lost was Lipscomb, because even by his magical powers, he couldn't create that horrible of a second half. And the slate is basically wiped clean.
And when you have 17 freshmen, you're bound to lose one bye game, so you can't just wipe all of them from the record. I think you got to leave one on there. It's a reminder. But, yeah, I wish we could get rid of those for sure.
Yep. And if anyone's wondering, the ghost of Christmas present isn't a real ghost. It's just the feeling of Archie's Indiana job, and it's represented by his late-night show with Sean.
Future A-10 coach Archie Miller. Or Pitt coach. We'll see. Don't know where he's going to end up yet.
Archie and Sean are going to UMass and Pitt. We just don't know which one's going where.
Yeah, we'll see. All right, next one. We'll go to Rhode Island. The Rams, they've been a good team this year. They're top 100 in KenPom, looking like they could be a double bye threat. And really looking at their offensive stats this year, good inside scoring team as we expected. They're shooting the three well this year too. And overall, just a really high field goal percentage across the board. The one glaring weakness I see with the Rams is that they are 342nd in the country in non-steal turnovers. So basically, they give the ball away a lot, whether it's traveling, throwing the ball out of bounds, double dribble, over and back, whatever.
Oh, offensive fouls.
Be anything.
The Mitchell twins, we got to include that.
Six men on the court, shout out GW. I mean, yeah, there's a whole bunch of things that could happen. But for my gift to them, you know, it should be widely available now that you Major League Baseball pitchers can't use it anymore. And also baseball's just kind of over for the foreseeable future. I'm going to give the Rams some spider tack. They need something to grip the basketball better, prevent some of those turnovers. And as far as I know, it's legal in college basketball, unlike Major League Baseball. So I think that's going to help them out a little bit. And if they cut down on those turnovers, this could actually end up being a really solid offensive team.
Yeah, they're going to start running around with little sweat towels tucked into their pocket. Just a place to keep it since they can't wear hats.
Yeah, find it somewhere.
All right, I'll give a gift out to Duquesne. This was the easiest one for me to figure out here. It's just Sincere Carey comes back. Mike Bekelsia heads home for Christmas in East Ohio, and his great buddy Sincere comes up to him and says, "Hey, I miss it. I'm back." As we mentioned in where he at, Carey's having a terrific season, 15 points a game, 4.8 rebounds, 5.1 assists over at Kent State. And for how talented this Duquesne offense is, theoretically, it just doesn't fit together, right? And the biggest issue is that this team has no true point guard. Primo Spears may get there one day, but he's not ready right now. Leon Ayers isn't really a point guard. Jackie Johnson is just a microwave guy. He is definitely not a point guard. And they need somebody to just glue everybody together. And most importantly, they need somebody who can consistently actually do something offensively in the final 4 minutes of a game. And it's just a bummer that the answer to all those questions was right here a year ago.
Yeah, I'd say a year ago we all had a lot higher hopes for Sincere Carey in the A-10, and unfortunately didn't work out, but it is good to hear that he's playing well in the MAC, so hopefully he keeps it up this year. All right, I think I might be down to my last gift, getting down to the bottom of the bag, and we're going over to George Mason, who has had an up-and-down season, to say the least. After beating a ranked Maryland on the road, it's been kind of tough times for the Patriots. I think their gift, something that can help them out, a nice pair of noise-canceling headphones just to drown out the noise. And I see this a lot. Like, I'm sure it's not everywhere, but at least like in the A-10 Twitter community, you know, people rip on George Mason all the time, saying like, oh, they were the A-10 champions for about 4 days this year. You know, they should raise a banner for that. I mean, look, people got a little bit carried away early in the season when Mason went on that nice winning streak to start out. But what I think we need to realize, over that 5-game losing streak, it's not like they were losing to really bad teams. The one bad loss in there was at home against Old Dominion, but I mean, they show up to South Dakota, play a couple close games against good teams. They lose at James Madison, who just knocked off Virginia. Like, clearly, they're not looking like an A-10 contender anymore, but I think it was a little bit overstated how poorly they were playing over that stretch. I still think they have a chance to be a middle-of-the-pack team, maybe even a little bit better if they reach the ceiling they had the first couple weeks of the season, but they just got to get rid of the distractions. Don't pay attention to any of the knuckleheads out there online, on social media, and get right for conference season. They could still have a really good season. We've seen the ceiling. It's pretty high if they're playing well.
Yeah, they've lost a lot of close games too, so It's not hard to see a scenario where the record at least looks better.
And I think their KenPom rating right now, I don't have it pulled up, it's about 10 spots lower than it was after they beat Maryland. So it's not like, at least analytically speaking, I don't know how much has changed really. Clearly they're not the same team they were in early November, but I'm not completely just selling George Mason this year. I don't think we should completely fall asleep on them just yet.
Yep, I agree. And so we'll close things out at the bottom of the standings. Still got a gift sitting in here for George Washington. And I'm going to give them a nice little handful of PIM particles, because the last 5 years have basically gone like the 5 years in between Avengers Infinity War and Endgame. It's about the single worst case scenario. It's just desolation, destruction. They don't even have the hope of this being the one true victorious scenario that Doctor Strange foresaw. This is just going to lead to more losing. So I'm going to give them a chance to have seen how this has gone and then go back in time and try to figure out what they could do. Because you look at all these different checkpoints of GW, the 2006 season where they finished the year ranked 14th in the AP poll. They were an 8 seed in the NCAA tournament. They went undefeated in A-10 play. They've only made the NCAA tournament twice since then. Mm-hmm. Even if you just go to the end of 2016, they won the NIT. It was a team that closed actually really poorly in the regular season. They probably should have been a tournament squad. But they win the NIT. Yuta Watanabe is only a sophomore. They have a new coach in Maurice Joseph. It looks like they've put all the Mike Longergan scandal behind them. And since then, it's just been flat out awful. 2016 was the end of Longergan's last season when they won the NIT. So basically from the moment they realized that they had to get rid of Longergan, things have just not gone right for them. And at this point, they're in such a deep hole. I think we got to help them go back in time. Maybe you still hire Maurice Joseph. Maybe you do something else differently. Maybe you hire a different coach entirely. But it's hard to see a lot of different scenarios where things ended up this badly for GW.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't that NIT championship team have three NBA players?
They did.
They had Yuta, Tyler Cavanaugh, and wasn't Greeno still on the team too?
Yep, because Tyler Cavanaugh has appeared in, I believe, two NBA games.
That is hard to believe, though, how good they were. And they should have been better. They had the talent. Like, in hindsight, the fact that they won the NIT is a disappointment. They should have gone to the tournament with that team. But yeah, GW has fallen so far. And sometimes I think we need to remind themselves that for a pretty good part of our lifetimes, they were one of the better teams in the A-10. And now it's hard to believe that just with where they're at this season. So hopefully they get back soon. It'd be good for the conference.
Yeah, they've gone from being one of the darlings of the mid-majors about 15 years ago to, if you just look at it from a basketball sense, you could legitimately make a case that they could get kicked out of the conference. It would never happen because of the DC market, but you could.
Sounds like a Sean Miller rebuilding job next year. We'll see.
Oh man, and in a city where underhanded deals and sneaking around is the norm. What an incredible match that would be.
Yeah, can't imagine the NIL deals he'd pull off. That'd be good.
All right, maybe that should have been GW's gift, the promise of Sean Miller. But regardless, I've checked in the back of the sleigh. Everything is empty.
And nothing for Loyola. Not yet.
No, not yet. And you know what? Things are going pretty well over there.
They don't need any help.
Yeah, I mean, like, what, we're going to give Lucas Williamson a second year of COVID eligibility? I guess that would be about the only thing. But the gift for the A-10 fans would be me telling them to go watch Loyola, because that team is really fun and they're really good.
Yeah, I need to. I don't know anything about Loyola. I miss them in the battle for Atlantis. I'm going to try to catch when they play Davidson coming up. Although, why are they playing at 1 o'clock on a
Wednesday?
Everybody's
playing on the day playing a day game that day.
I gotta work. I need to watch basketball. It sucks. But yeah, I want to try to pay attention to them a little bit because they are having a great season. When they make the tournament, we're taking credit as part of our three bids. So rooting for them. Hopefully they come into the A-10 strong next year.
Yep. They were my favorite non-A-10 team in the country last year too. So fun team to watch. Speaking of their upcoming big conference game against the Davidson Wildcats, we're going to be joined here momentarily by the guys from Lux's Litter Box. All right, we are now joined by the guys from Lux's Litter Box, Cool and Sean, here to talk Davidson with us. Thanks for joining us, guys.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah.
So I guess to kick it off, you guys are a little bit newer to the A-10 Twitter scene, but you guys did a really cool project over the summer interviewing someone from all 14 Atlantic 10 schools. So before we get into how Davidson's been doing this year, why don't you guys just tell us a little bit about that, how you got started doing your podcasts and everything?
Do you want me to do it, Cole? So basically, Cole got started writing for A-10 Talk second half of our freshman year at Davidson. And I thought that was super awesome. I've had some experience doing a podcast before. And so I was like, hey, Cole, why don't we just start a Davidson podcast? There's not really a huge audience on the Davidson Twitter world. We can kind of expand that, tap into it. Obviously, we got a lot of really awesome alumni. Steph Curry just broke the NBA three-point record as time we're recording this. And so we really wanted to tap into that. And as we were expanding content and doing stuff over the summer, and we were kind of in that lull of where there's not really a lot going on for college basketball, I was like, Cole, you got the connections. Let's just see if we can do something fun, kind of unite the A-10 Twitter community and the A-10 community in general. And let's have fun talking some hoops. And I'm relatively new to the A-10 universe. Basketball universe, it's myself. I'm sort of an SEC basketball fan, so I needed to learn a lot of this stuff. So it was really fun talking to everyone and learning about all the A-10 teams this year.
Yeah, so we called it like our little road trip type of experience. We interviewed one from every 14 schools just before to get a preview. You know, like Sean was saying, like I was A-10 talk person, I guess, and I followed the conference a little bit before, but you know, as Bob McKillop would say, like, I don't know the difference between a pick and roll and a dinner roll. No, that wasn't directed at me. but he said that. I just thought it was really funny. But no, to be truth though, like I don't know a ton about basketball, like in terms of the actual gameplay, you know, breaking down plays, defense, offense, stuff like that. So Sean kind of fills in those gaps. And I think it was just kind of an adventure for both of us to kind of really get prepared for the season, to kind of talk to everyone. We talked to some amazing faces. The A-10 community is so amazing. We talked to Petey Buckets, the Roddy Rampage guys, the list goes on, you know, A-10 talk guys, et cetera. And it was just a great experience and a great way to learn about the conference for us and our viewers.
Yeah. Honestly, I'm jealous of the project. Something that I've kind of wanted to do for years, but we've fallen into, we just kind of like how we do our season previews. And as soon as you guys put out that you were doing that road trip this year, I felt like we kind of missed the train there. So to start off year one of the podcast with that, super impressive. So
yeah. And we are the biggest procrastinators, especially over the summer. Like, I think at the end of every season, getting into the springtime, we're not like, yeah, we're going to do all these cool podcasts. We'll get some good guests over the summer. It's never happened. So
nobody responds. You guys are on summer.
Yeah, we get it. I mean, like, maybe it seemed clean getting posted every week or almost every week, but like working, doing this and classes at the same time, like there were some weeks where it was just a mess and like where we had to like keep postponing guest visits and just too stressed out. And like we had even planned like some big combination episode where we clipped together like all of the best moments from the road trip, like the funny moments, like from Kurt Hicks Sage and whatnot. But we kind of procrastinated that one out. So next year when we do this again, we'll have that mega episode.
Exactly. And unfortunately that hit right at the time finals were happening. And so really didn't feel overly compelled to put ourselves through that right in the middle of our, I guess like first real finals experiences too. So
I guess going into Davidson this year, I want to say the Wildcats were picked around sixth place in the preseason. Pretty consistent team in the A-10 over the years. I can't really think of a time where Davidson wasn't at least a middle-of-the-pack team in the A-10. But right now, you look at the net rankings for the A-10, which aren't the prettiest in the world, but Davidson's at the top. They're 50th in the net. They're also a top 70 KenPom team right now. How do you guys think the expectations have changed over the course of the season, or do you think there are higher expectations where going into the season, maybe Davidson just had hopes of being above 500, but now is there a legitimate chance for bigger things for the Wildcats?
Yeah. That's a great point. That's exactly where we're at right now. I would say my main takeaway from where we are right now versus where the expectations were is that the floor for this team feels a lot higher. I wouldn't go ahead and say maybe the ceiling is higher than we thought, but like when I was writing previews to start the season, I was like, you know, usually we come into a season where like it's Bob McKillop, you know, we got Grady on the team still, we have Goodmanson on the team still, you know, the team has finished in the top four or been in the final four for the A-10 tournament every single year since they've joined, right? Like there is a floor every year going in. And then this year it was like, okay, Grady's gone, Carter Collins is gone, okay, now we don't really have like a point guard who has ran point guard a lot. There seemed to be a lot of holes like there were for pretty much every A-10 team other than Richmond and Bonaventure, and you can maybe argue Rhode Island, right? But like, you know, so we were like in a big question mark, like the floor could be a lot lower, you know, like if Lee doesn't step up to where we want him to, if Lawyer, Foster Lawyer isn't the point guard we need him to be, like who knows? But the greatest thing from the season so far is that the guards have actually been some of the most consistent players that we've had on the team. Lee's been obviously excellent. His rebounding has improved tremendously. Foster can shoot lights out sometimes. It's just amazing. And so, you know, I don't want to, you know, get overly optimistic. I think in terms of the ceiling, I think our ceiling will be made. We'll know more about Davidson's ceiling next Wednesday when we play Loyola Chicago. But right now I'm definitely very happy, and my expectations for the floor for this team is a lot higher than it was.
And I think Cole's making a good point there too. We really don't know a ton about this team yet, just because we haven't really played a ton of great competition. Obviously we've had some pretty solid wins. We contended with some really good teams. I think San Francisco is still like top 30. They're undefeated and top 30 KenPom. But really other than that, we haven't had a ton of tests. And I mean, the only really big loss that you feel like maybe you could have had something was New Mexico State. But other than that, I mean, I'm pretty content with this season so far. And like Cole was saying, I think the big key is that the floor was raised. I don't know if the ceiling is yet raised, but I'm optimistic. I was completely pessimistic at the beginning of the season just because of point guard play. But I think Cole is completely spot on with that. I think the floor was raised with how we've fared so far.
And one thing to add, like yes, on paper, the team has not played or beaten anyone inside the top 100 of KenPom or net. And maybe that's a red flag for some, but, you know, I think that it's always good to remember, you know, how hard it is and for any team, you know, to win six games in a row. Davidson is now on a six game winning streak. And like, maybe, you know, some teams are not, you know, tournament teams that we're beating, but, you know, University of Delaware was picked to win the Colonial Athletic. And, you know, we played at Northeastern, a team that UMass couldn't win at. And they're really good at home generally. And, you know, like maybe those wins don't jump out to you, but they're wins. And not only are the wins, but we're handling all of our opponents. You know, they're double. The reason that we've risen from 91, 92 in KenPom all the way up to like 62 now is because we're stifling our opponents. You know, we beat UD, University of Delaware, not Dayton, by 20. We beat Charlotte on the road by 17, you know. So I think the team is definitely doing really well, even though we haven't necessarily played those eye catcher type of teams. Yeah.
So I'm glad you guys mentioned the floor of this team, and that is a signature piece of McKillop, and especially with the steady hand of Brajkovic to just get some reliable scoring and rebounding every game. They do have a floor probably somewhere right in like the 7-8 range is a worst case scenario. To me, there's really only one way that floor drops, and that's if we see a repeat of last year's second half by Hyungjoon Lee. Of course, he looked like a superstar the first half of the year and then basically just kind of looked like a bench guy second half. Right now, he's at 18.6 points a game, 7 rebounds a game. He's shooting 41% from three, 86% from the line. He's almost a 50-40-90 guy. He's a 50-40-85, so pretty impressive nonetheless. Where's Hyungjoon Lee going as we turn the calendar into conference play?
Yeah, that's a great point. I think specifically what you're referencing last season, you know, ignoring our loss to Charlotte, like Lee was very solid in the first half. And then we played, I think, at home against Dayton and they shut Lee down. And then after that, aside from maybe the Mason game in the A-10 tournament, there weren't too many box scores that really jumped out from Lee. This season, you know, I can't predict the future and say that's not going to happen, but he definitely seems like a more solid player. But the thing that makes me think that it's less likely to happen is that even when Lee is having games that are quiet or not big, or he is missing 7 shots in a row, like he did against Northeastern, 7 threes in a row, he put up 23 in that game against Northeastern. Against William & Mary, he was having like a off kind of day. Where he, you know, even missed 2 free throws, he had a double-double that game, right? So it's like, it seems like Lee's floor is a lot higher than it has been in the past 2 years. So I am optimistic about Lee staying consistent and that helping our floor. And I'm also optimistic about Mike Jones continuing to do as well as he has so far and about Des Watson continuing to get better every single game.
And something about Lee is me and Cole were actually a little bit concerned. It seems crazy to think that now that he's averaging 18 points a game, but for the first few games, like Cole was saying, he was having some pretty quiet games where he didn't necessarily take over and dominate, especially when we were playing against like maybe not as great opponents. But I mean, he definitely has turned it on recently, and that's definitely been helped by the fact that Foster Lawyers really stepped up recently as well. He's another person where if both of them can get going, then Davidson's going to be a contender in the A-10. But I think a lot of that's going to come off of the fact that Foster needs to take some of the pressure off of Lee. And I think that's what was happening last year as well, is that if everyone's focusing on shutting down Lee, he potentially could get shut down. He's not overly crazy athletic. He's not huge. He's 6'7", but he's not like a crazy big guy. And he doesn't really necessarily have that trait to completely dominate games. So it'll be interesting to see what happens, especially once we get into conference play and against teams that are a little bit stacked, a little bit bigger, and a little bit more athletic.
So I think clearly Lee's been the leader of this team, but you guys also mentioned Foster Lawyer, who came in from Michigan State. I would say one of the most hyped A-10 transfers this year coming out of the Big Ten. What have you guys seen from him this year? What should A-10 fans know about him going into conference play? And I guess, what do you think he does maybe like differently than some other Davidson point guards that we've seen in the past couple years?
I think Sean can talk more about like the actual basketball side, but from just like a personnel side, from being at the home games, something that maybe you're not going to get across from the TV is that Foster is a tremendous leader to have on the court. I'm not sure if that makes him different than Kellen or Carter, but it definitely probably is different than most other transfers coming into other schools. You know, Foster brings them 3 years at Michigan State. And, you know, you can see him really taking a step up, you know, helping out his teammates, you know, guiding them. But I think the other thing that makes Foster maybe different is that the dude's ceiling for how many points and how many threes he can make is probably unlike most anything we've seen in a while. Like, just the Northeastern game was just absolutely nuts. You know, Lee wasn't having the very best three-point shooting night he's ever had, and Lawyer just made absolutely everything. And if you didn't see, he put up 35 points and was, I think, 8 for 12 on threes, which is just insane. So I think that's the main thing. But Sean, do you have anything else?
Well, I mean, I think one of the big red flags almost for Foster, I think Foster's a great player. And I think, like Cole was saying, he's a great leader. He was a captain at Michigan State, captain at Davidson, hard to do when you're a transfer. I think the biggest red flag that he potentially has and how he's sort of unlike some of the Davidson point guards is that he's not the best defender ever. That was something where that Michigan State fans I noted when he was transferring was that he wasn't maybe the most capable defender against Big Ten competition. Of course, a little bit of a step down. He's been good as a defender. He hasn't been amazing, but I mean, he's also put up a ton of points. And I think that's the big key about Foster is he's a scorer. He's not going to dominate the stat sheet with a ton of rebounds, with a ton of assists. He's actually done pretty well in assists, but he's not. But I think he's just mainly a pure scorer from what I've seen.
So the other guy I want to talk about is Sam Mnenga. He's had a decent little jump this year, up to 8 points a game, 5.3 rebounds. He has more than doubled his assists up to 2.2 a game, but he's kind of in this just basically like dead zone stats-wise, where he's certainly nowhere near a star yet, but he's too good to just kind of be like your average role player. He was a potential breakout guy for a lot of people this year. I had him kind of penciled down for a breakout next year when he's not next to Brejkovic. Just getting a perspective for you guys, like where is this Mnenga thing heading? Is there a jump coming this year, next year? Are we kind of seeing the guy that he is right now? He's a very fascinating player to me. He does a lot of things well, but I'm not sure what he does great yet.
I think that's a very good point. He had, I'm pretty sure it was last year, Cole, where he had the breakout game against Texas.
Yeah.
In the tournament.
Yeah, the preseason NIT.
Yeah.
The fake Maui that wasn't in Maui.
Yeah, exactly. What was that, in like Asheville or something?
Yep.
Yeah, that was so strange. But yeah, I mean, he's had even since his freshman year, he's had moments where you can see sort of the stardom of what he could become. And I think you're right with your assessment. I think once Luke is gone, I think he'll see a lot more, not necessarily playing time, but a lot more focus and a lot more like a bigger role within the offense. But yeah, I think also what really sticks out to me, and I think it's crazy, he's actually a pretty good shooter as well. So I would like to see maybe some more develop through that. He's hitting threes at a 57% clip right now, which is crazy for a big guy. But especially if we can kind of utilize that a little bit more, have a stretch big, that'd be nice. But yeah, I think it'll be interesting to see what he develops. I'm not entirely sure. He's had a pretty good jump this year, but I think a lot of that's going to come with the growth of this team in general, just because I think this team has so much potential to mold and change as we head into conference play.
Yep. My take on Mnenga, I guess, I mean, it's no doubt he is the future of this team. He's the best person we have in our sophomore class. He's very good. Like you said, I think he hit the nail in the head. He does a lot of things well. He can shoot. He's not the worst defender. He can dominate in the paint. He can, one thing that I've really enjoyed in home games is he can make big momentum swinging type of plays. He's great. You know, someone might look at the numbers and say, okay, he was averaging a double-double, I think, through his first two games, and then now he's not doing that. Okay, maybe he's just inconsistent. I'm not really sure if it's Mnenga that's inconsistent. It might just be, you know, his usage that's inconsistent. I think I was just looking at his minutes. So they kind of bounce around a little. You know, you have some games where it's 30 minutes, some where it's 21 minutes, 22 minutes. So I, you know, it might just be, you know, Mikal sees him getting more time for some opponents, you know. So I, to be honest, I don't know. I couldn't project when Menengo's breakout is going to happen. I think that I'd like to stay optimistic and say that it is going to happen. I think he has the talent for it to happen. And I think that he is going to be someone who we have to rely heavily on by next year, or at the very least his senior year. So yeah, we'll see. Yeah, I truly don't have an answer. But I think that he does have the talent, and I wouldn't be surprised if we lean on him more heavily as the year continues.
So you're busy guys, you're focused on Davidson, but we know your eyes have certainly had to have wandered over to some of their soon to be opponents on the schedule. So I'll just ask you each for just kind of one thing that has stood out to you in this A-10 season so far outside of the Wildcats, whether it's a team, a player, a good thing, a bad thing, really just whatever pops into your brain that you want to talk about.
Cole, do you want to go first? I need to gather my thoughts. There's so much. Me and Cole text every day about who's won, who's losing in the A-10, what matchups are going on. We're really big college basketball guys. And I mean, I think we're probably both watching at least a game or two a day, but
yeah. I don't know if I have like specific thoughts on specific teams that haven't already been like covered to death by their respective fan bases, but in terms of my general takeaways, and this kind of relates to Davidson, you know, I, you know, will watch Rhode Island play or Dayton or VCU, and they're different types of teams than Davidson are. They're a lot more athletic, quick. VCU's defense is significantly better than Davidson's defense, like it's no doubt. And I feel like because of that, and I could be dead wrong about this, we'll see what happens in the future, but because of that, I feel like there's a little bit of like disrespect or underratedness for Davidson. Like, my opinion is that is Davidson the same? Does Davidson look good in the eyes of what a VCU team looking good will look like? No, they're a different type of team. They beat you in a different way than VCU beats you, than Rhode Island beats you, than Dayton beats you, et cetera, than SLU beats you. So I think that this Davidson team could be very good, and we'll see what happens with Loyola Chicago. That's my first general takeaway. But my second general takeaway is just with the at-large discussion in general. If you haven't been able to tell already, I tend to stay pretty optimistic, and I think that in general there's like a bit too much pessimism for me on Twitter right now regarding the conference's at-large chances and how bad the net looks, and you know, is it going to be a one bid league, etc. The way that I look at this conference right now is that, okay, there's one glaring thing you want back, you know. Bonaventure against Northern Iowa, had they, you know, there is an alternate universe where they still win their MTE and they beat Northern Iowa. Lofton doesn't get injured in the Coppin State game, and maybe they beat UConn too. And right now they're sitting at like sixth or seventh in the country in the AP poll. Yeah, that, you know, of course, as A-10 fans, we all want that, and we all wish that happened. But putting that aside, I think that the conference is in kind of is not really worse than I expected it to be. I think that I think we knew we were missing a lot of things from a lot of different teams this year. And I see the conference in kind of a middle ground state where are we where we were in 2013, 14, 15? No, like there isn't like several bids that we're all very optimistic about, but we're also not where we were in 2018 or 2019, where Rhode Island was a lock bid in 2018 and VCU was a lock in 2019. And the only reason we were multi-bid league was because Davidson won the tournament in 2018 and SLU won in 2019, where I don't think we're there either. I was comparing like the KenPom conference ratings. The conference as a whole is a lot higher than it was in those two seasons. And in the net, I like went to the Wayback Machine and like pulled up the net rankings from December, like the same time this month in 2018. So for the 2019 tournament. And it was like just a little bit worse than it is now. So I think the conference is actually doing fine. I think that the top of the conference, maybe with the exception of Davidson, the rest of the conference that's in the top should all go up. And I think Davidson will too, but I think Davidson would be the most question mark of the group. But anyways, what I'm trying to say is that like at the very worst case, we push towards 2018, 2019 and someone else wins the conference and we're a two-bid league. But at the very best case, you have like six might be over, but like four teams that all could separate themselves from the rest of the other teams in the A-10 and emerge as a second at large with Mona. And I'm optimistic that it's going to swing that way rather than swing the other way.
Yeah, I mean, I'll let you jump in, Sean, next. But I just want to say, I think that's a great answer. I think people on Twitter are very reactionary, especially to losses that maybe shouldn't happen. But you're right. Go back a couple of years. Like our first year doing the podcast, which was the 2018-19 season that VCU ended up winning the conference. I mean, go back to this time, that season, it looked like there was no chance anyone was getting an at-large bid. But like you were saying, right now we have 7 teams in the KenPom top 100. I think it's going to be a very competitive conference race. And if anybody stands out and pulls ahead from the pack and goes 14-4, 15-3, which might not happen, it might be very closely packed at the top of the league, but there's going to be enough games out there, I think, where a lot of teams are still going to have a chance for the postseason. So I think that's a good take.
Yeah. Like I was looking at like just the most recent data I could find, like Loyola Chicago last year, they finished as what, an 8 seed and went to the Sweet 16, were ranked at the end. You look at their non-conference game, pretend you're a Loyola Chicago fan right after they lost, or not, it's not a non-conference game, but like early conference schedule, right after they lost to Indiana State. They had basically no good wins and they had like 2 fine losses and then a loss to Indiana State. If we were A-10 fans, we would have reacted that so bad. If we were Loyola Chicago fans, we would have reacted so badly to that and like been like, oh, this team is terrible. Like this team's not getting a bid. But not only did they get a bid, they did so much better than that. And just because, you know, there was more basketball to play. And when they had teams that they could beat, they beat up on them bad, you know? So if these teams at the top can just separate themselves and there's plenty that have the opportunity to, I think I'm really optimistic about the conference.
Yeah. And that being said, I think there's a lot of opportunity where, I mean, especially for like the first few weeks when Dayton was going down, when VCU was going down, there was a lot of talk in the conference about, oh, we're going down in flames. Like, thank goodness we have Bonaventure as our saving grace, but everyone else seems like we're going down in flames. There's a lot of really bad losses, but I feel like this is going to be probably the most competitive conference season we've seen in a long time, just because, I mean, even like VCU, I think with the return of Ace Baldwin, I think they could turn a corner and become a contender, maybe even for this conference. Their defense has still been pretty amazing. And I mean, they held Baylor is a really good team. They held Baylor to under 70 points, which is a big feat. I think Dayton, even though they had the first, they dropped the first few games, I think Dayton has the potential to be a contender in the conference. St. Bonaventure maybe shouldn't feel as safe as they do up top, just because there is so much uncertainty down at the bottom. And there is potential for once everyone kind of gets their pieces together and gets some time under their belt to kind of mesh and gel together, that they could become another one of those teams that stands out in the conference.
Yeah, we always like to keep it on the optimistic side. We'll have to dive into our conference preview 2 weeks from now. But to me, the biggest thing that I agree with is the pathway to a second at large is through a clear second place team, whether it's Dayton or VCU or Richmond or Davidson
or St. Bonaventure,
or maybe even St. Louis.
St. Bonaventure might not win.
We're going to keep crossing our fingers and assuming that we don't have to worry about Bonaventure getting there at large. But there needs to be a clear gap between Bonaventure and question mark and number 3. And if they can do that, if they can rack up wins against 3, 4, 5, 6, those teams, then things are looking good. So speaking of that 2-6 range, we'll close this out by asking you guys, where does Davidson finish this year?
That is a great question. So I started out this season extremely pessimistic and had them at like 8 or something, just because I thought the point guard issues were too glaring. I would say, just because, I mean, again, there's a lot of question marks, but I would say probably within the 4-5 range. I don't think that they are a contender for the top of the conference, but I could be completely wrong on this. So Cole, I'm interested to see what Cole thinks. Cole's typically more optimistic than I am.
Yes. Let's see. What do I think? I think I'd actually probably agree 4 or 5 range. That's maybe I'd say like 3 to 4, because the reason I'd say maybe 3 to 4 is because I agree with Sean about everything, but our schedule is not as bad as other teams, or does not have as many top teams as other teams' schedules have. I think we get Bonaventure once, Richmond once, Dayton once, SLU once. The only team we get twice that's in the top is Rhode Island and VCU, and those are not the tippy top of the conference as the way things are looking right now. So we play like, and I think we can beat Rhode Island and VCU at home. So I think that maybe the scheduling will help. I think, like, if I were to pick one number right now, I would say 4, just because I think that where there's a Bob McKillop, there's a way. And I'm optimistic. But if we got 5 or even 6, like, I wouldn't be surprised, because, you know, we'd probably maybe – okay, no, I don't want to jinx it, so I'm not going to say anything. But that's where I'll leave it.
Yep, so – there you go. We got a split panel here on Davidson's finish from the Lux's litter box, guys. Cole and Sean, thank you for joining us. Where can the good people find your work?
Wait, just before we get that, where do you guys project Davidson to finish?
That's a great question. See, right now, like, I feel like there's about 6 teams in the A-10 that I would put in the 4 or 5 range, but obviously someone's, you know, I mean, like, one team can be there. It seems like it's very evenly matched right now. I think you guys pretty much hit the nail on the head. I don't know if Davidson has the ceiling to win the conference, but you guys mentioned the pretty favorable schedule. I think that's going to help. And the fact that Davidson, I don't think this is something most people realize, but Davidson has one of the best home court records in the conference since they've joined the A-10. They pretty much never lose home games, so I think that's going to help them out a lot. I think I'm going to kind of just agree and say 4th place. I think right now St. Bonaventure and Dayton are going to finish ahead. And then I'm still pretty high on VCU, although a lot of other teams could jump up there too.
Yeah, I have them clearly in the 5, 6, 7 tier. So I guess we're kind of split in the same way. We tried to sub Cole out of the game, and he just waved at us and just went and inbounded the ball. A bold move from a first-time guest, but I appreciate it, Cole.
Hey, and our first Davidson guest ever, if I'm not mistaken. So
we're getting to that.
Okay. Sorry, didn't mean to steal your thunder, Tyler. Go ahead.
Well, no. I guess we're – the bar's playing closing time. So, yes. Cole and Sean, where can everybody find your work?
So, you can find us at LLB_podcast on Twitter. And then you can find our own podcast, which we need to start get going again, on Spotify or anywhere you can find podcasts.
Yep. And you can follow me on Twitter too, at WildcatCole24. I should get back to writing A-10 Talk articles weekly covering Davidson. And we should be getting back to podcasting weekly or semi-weekly, breaking down the games. Should hopefully do the Loyola Chicago game, a preview for that maybe. And everyone, if you're an A-10 fan, should be watching that game, because I think that's actually going to be a really important non-conference game for everyone, because it'll kind of determine where Davidson stacks up.
That's a conference game.
Oh, yes.
Now it's a conference game.
I mean, you could call it the non-conference A-10 championship. I mean, you got the two best A-10 teams in the net going at it.
That we could. And as Matt said, he kind of buried the lead. Cole and Sean, our first Davidson guests. Somehow the Wildcats have been decent to good all 4 years of this pod. It's the first time that we are getting the show down to North Carolina. And this now makes it 13 of the 14 teams that we have had a guest for. So if anyone listened all the way to the end of this pod and you know who the one team is yet that we have not dedicated at least a half an episode specifically to, send us a DM. We will come up with some sort of prize for the first person to get it right. So with that, Cole and Sean, thank you for joining us.
Thanks so much for having us. Thank you so much for having us.
Yeah, thank you to the guys from Lux's Litter Box, and thank you all for listening to this episode of the 3Bid League podcast. If you enjoyed the show, give us 5 stars on iTunes. Leave us a review. Be sure to try to answer our trivia question. And everybody, have a good holiday season.